delivers consequential coverage from the biggest countries in South America to the smallest enclaves of Central America and the Caribbean, and is available on SoundCloud, iTunes Podcast, and Google Play Music. The Latino Media Collective is recorded in WPFW Studios and airs Fridays at 1 p.m. on WPFW Washington.
Greetings, I'm Maimuna Youssef, and this is WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice.
Good morning, everybody. This is Larry Stafford Jr. once again on Community Watch and Comment, your co-host with Dave Rabin, and it is great to be with everybody this Tuesday morning. We've got an important show lined up today, and I hope everybody can bear with me. I got a little bit of a cold. I don't even know if anybody can tell, but I'm just telling everybody that just in case you hear me sneeze or sniffle or something like that, but I'm glad to talk with everyone today and be able to do it from home right here in gorgeous Prince George's County, Maryland. Shout out to everybody in Prince George's County, Maryland this morning. So we're going to be taking a deep dive into some critical issues affecting Maryland, specifically around the budget today. And for that, we'll be having a conversation with the great delegate from the district, from District 26, Jamila Woods. So if you'd like to call in to join that conversation, that number is 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. And at any point during that conversation with Delegate Jamila Woods, you can call in and be a part of the discussion. So before we get into that conversation with Delegate Jamila Woods, we've got a few headlines that we'll start with. So I'll be speaking with Delegate Woods in just a few minutes, but we'll first dive into some of the big stories happening here in Maryland. So one of the top stories occurring right now is that the race for the U.S. Senate is extremely competitive this election cycle. So there's recent polling showing the race as close as tied. Some polling showing the Democrat in the race, Angela Alsobrooks, up by 5 points. And today, I believe Emerson College actually just released a poll showing her up by 7. And then there are reports, of course, of national Republicans presenting some polling in private, though it has not been released officially in the public domain, showing a very competitive race as well. I believe their polling had it tied also. So it's shaping up to be a pivotal post-Labor Day push to the polls. For those who know that after Labor Day is when many campaigns get into a more full gear. And I know many of you, of course, are rightfully so paying attention to the presidential race. But in Maryland, there is also a competitive U.S. Senate race, and it's kicking into full gear. We're still waiting on the news, I believe. I could be wrong about this, but I don't know if the debate times and dates have been totally set yet. I'll look into that during the show and let folks know when that's going to be, because it'll be critical for everybody here listening to weigh in, make your voice heard with your vote, and also, you know, with, you know, your engagement in the political process. So, yeah, high stakes here in Maryland with that. In other news, United States Representative Jamie Raskin, representing the 8th Congressional District in Maryland, is taking a bit of personal tragedy and turning it into his views on transformative policy. He's introduced the Stop Suicide Act, aimed at creating more accessible and effective mental health services for individuals experiencing serious thoughts of self-harm. This is a bipartisan bill co-sponsored by Rep. Don Bacon, and it seeks to expand crisis stabilization services across the country, filling a gap in our mental health system that could save countless lives. So, yeah, look into what Congressman Raskin is doing. I know he gets a lot of credit and sometimes a lot of flack for some of his engagement in the House of Representatives on holding the administration's accountable and his thoughts on Donald Trump particularly. I know he's gotten a lot of flack for, and also a lot of praise and support. But yeah, this is an under the radar piece of legislation that he's pushing. So in other news, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention reports that suicide rates have increased by 36% over the last two decades. And so this is why this act is so important. And almost 50,000 people died by suicide just last year. The Stop Suicide Act aims to offer grants for mental health providers to create or expand stabilization programs to help those in need before it becomes a crisis requiring emergency services. Representative Raskin's leadership in this space is absolutely critical, and it's fantastic to see so many organizations already supporting the effort. And now before our interview with Delegate Jamila Woods, I want to just give everybody a quick reminder that we love to hear from our listeners. So if you'd like to join the conversation, please dial in at 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. So right now we'll take a quick music break, and when we return, we'll be speaking with Delegate Jamila Woods about Maryland's budget and what these changes mean for families across the state. Stay with us. You're listening to Community Watch and Comment on WPFW 89.3 FM.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Community Watch and Comment right here on the station you love, WPFW 89.3 FM. Once again, I am your hostess with the mostest. That's a little corny, but it's me, Larry Stafford Jr., here as the co-host for Dave Rabin this Tuesday. And as I said before, we've got a very, very special guest, somebody near and dear to my heart, because the work that she has done, not only in the state legislature, but certainly before being an elected official as well, but being a community leader and a community leader within our organization, Progressive Maryland, leading the fight for health care and, you know, against overdoses, fighting that crisis as well. Just so many things that Delegate Jamila Woods has fought for, have just been near and dear to my heart. And so I'm very excited about this conversation because we've got so much going on with our state budget that I think is being underreported. Every once in a while, you get a headline. This most recently, it's been coming out of the Maryland Association of Counties Conference out in Ocean City. That's usually when the governor has gone to deliver some bad news around the economy or the budget. And similarly, this year, he did that once again in Mako, announcing a series of reductions to the budget and a series of changes that would be made to the budget. And so we're here to discuss those things today. And I believe that Delegate Woods is able to talk about some of the things that are still there in the budget that are quite crucial, and how money is perhaps being redirected to support services like child care and Medicaid. And, of course, we want to get into, you know, what do we still have to fight for in this upcoming legislative session as far as the budget. So I want to, before we start, I want to remind everyone again that the number to join the conversation is 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. And join the conversation because this is vital. This is our, you know, public money at work. So if you've got some things in mind where we should be spending our resources, please bring them up with us and join the conversation with Delegate Woods. So Delegate Woods, thank you for being here. Delegate. All right, so yeah, maybe she's on mute. We'll try to get her on the line.
WPFW's This Is Reggae Music and the Reggae Experience presents a fundraising concert featuring Image Band, Curlew Reggae All-Stars Band, Lady Flame, and Carl Malcolm. On Saturday, October the 5th, 7 p.m. until midnight at King Solomon Lodge, 2245 Rhode Island Avenue, Northeast Washington, D.C. Tickets available at Eventbrite by searching WPFW. All proceeds benefit WPFW. Building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
We're back.
Morning. Can you all hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
All right. Okay. Well, wishing a pleasant good morning to you, Larry, and certainly to the WPFW 89.3 FM radio station listeners who are joining us this morning. As Larry said, I am Maryland State Delegate Jamila Woods, representing the 26th Legislative District in Prince George's County. Special shout out to the constituents represented in my coverage area, which includes Fort Washington, National Harbor, Oxon Hill, Temple Hills, Camp Springs, Suitland, and Accokeek. I am certainly honored to have this opportunity to discuss the hard work accomplished in Annapolis during this past legislative session, and to speak specifically to the budget, which is needless to say is one of our key legislative priorities. Larry, Governor Moore made it clear early on of his intentions to provide a plan to make both targeted and strategic spending cuts and to grow our economy while simultaneously protecting the programs and projects that Marylanders care about the most. This is clearly in line with his mantra to leave no one behind. And so as it relates to the recent spending reductions in the state budget and budget reallocations, it's extremely important that we as Marylanders understand that we did not have the same cash surpluses as did many other states as a result of external financial support due to COVID-19. These types of surpluses were in fact temporary. And as a result, we're now dealing with some shortfalls that have to be appropriately addressed in order to maintain the financial integrity of our economy to the very best of our ability. And so it's also important to note, Larry, that our 2025 Maryland summary reminds us that at least since 2017, the Department of Legislative Services forecasted structural budget deficits, and that we need to understand that out of our last 20 state budgets, 17 require cuts in order to remain balanced. And so we need to understand that sometimes we're going to have money shifted from programs that are underperforming to programs that have a proven success record. This includes streamlining how the state invests in public safety and seniors and higher education. And sometimes taxpayer money has to be divided between initiatives so that we can assure that our effective initiatives are moving forward. Our budget, Larry, helps to grow our economy. The allocation of considerable state resources toward fighting child poverty, investments in childcare, housing supply challenges, boosting our economy, and really building state governments. These are our priorities. And so sometimes we find ourselves in a position where these necessary cuts have to be made to offices that unfortunately are going to struggle as a result. But the funds, knowing that these funds are reallocated to prioritize things like healthcare and childcare spending. Our governor said that we know that Marylanders have access to healthcare and to preventative care when families have access to affordable healthcare, and that they're more likely to participate in our labor force and participate in our economy where most people can participate.
Got it. So it sounds like there's some degree of, you know, whenever there's budget reductions or, you know, fiscal challenges, right? Like a lot of people are not going to be happy, but it sounds like there are some things that, you know, people can take some solace in, at least with some of these reallocations, at least. So tell me more about the allocations towards healthcare, childcare, you mentioned. So what exactly is happening there?
Sure. So, of course, a major concern with our budget allocations was the continued growth in the state subsidized childcare program. And we are very happy that we have allocated much more money to childcare support. General funds of $218 million in FY24 and $270 million in FY25 go to support the Child Care Scholarship, which is a program that helps families enroll their young children in high quality child care. This is extremely important. We also had an increase of $9 million to support the implementation of the new federal summer EBT program. This makes sure that our children are getting the adequate nutrition that is necessary when school is not in place. So there's a big focus on making sure that the needs of our children are met. And childcare, Larry, for real, goes beyond just putting our children right in childcare centers. Childcare means we need to make sure that the care of our children is supported. And so we saw a $19.8 million increase to continue efforts to replace stolen SNAP benefits and temporary cash assistance benefits. We saw $26.7 million in the Department of Human Services, for rate setting and reform for child care placement providers. This helps us to make sure that there are competitive rates for those who are providing services to our children, and that we will also make sure that the needs of our children are being met.
Got it. So I, as now a father of three, actually.
Congratulations on your newborn.
Thank you. Got a new baby boy who is home with me today. I am solo parenting, so if y'all hear a baby crying, don't mind. Baby just wants to get in on the broadcast, may have a few questions, doesn't quite know how to say words yet. But, yeah, no, the child care stuff really sticks out to me. Who can benefit from that? I'm assuming a lot of these programs are normally mean tested, so I don't believe my family may benefit directly from that. But for our listeners, who can benefit from some of these programs, and do you know how they can get involved?
So in general, all of those who are seeking childcare can benefit, because now we'll have more service, both more services available, but also more services that are available to make sure that people can afford childcare. And so that is probably the largest benefit that we'll see. We also saw an increase in childcare providers. And so we wanted to make sure that those childcare providers also have everything that they need so that they can support the needs of our children. And so both those who are placing children in childcare and those providers who want to maintain an integral businesses and be able to provide the best for our children are benefiting from these increases.
Great. So what kind of impact do you expect to see, you know, as a result of, you know, this program? Has there been anything released as far as what they expect the overall impact on everyday working class people in Maryland?
Well, certainly I think the impact of receiving financial support, accessible, affordable childcare support is going to have a financial impact on our working class. And the fact that we can be more assured that these families are receiving high quality child care.
Great, fantastic. So going off a little bit in a different direction to some degree related to the budget. So I got to ask you, you know, I'd be remiss if I did not ask, right? What are you hearing as far as revenue? Because, you know, as you mentioned, the state has faced a number of fiscal challenges over the years, and well, actually, you know, there were good times. It seemed with the federal money coming in from the pandemic, you know, things didn't go as badly as they could have, most certainly. But certainly since then, you mentioned the projected deficit for the state. But one part that doesn't get talked about enough, I feel, is revenue. And I know that that's something that may be addressed in this upcoming legislative session. So what are you hearing about the revenue side?
So let's talk about, for example, the rainy day fund balance, right? This budget work allows for our rainy day fund budget of 9.4% of general fund revenues in FY25. To weather whatever uncertainties lie ahead, from potential federal government shutdowns to recession to natural disaster or other threats that may impact residents in the state of Maryland. I think we learned a great lesson from COVID-19, and while we had financial supports and all of those things put in place that gave us some surpluses, we also realized that the aftermath of COVID-19 saw a lot of people who had a reduction in funding, people who went out of businesses, all kinds of things that impacted us as a people. And I think it's so important that when we see that we can increase, for example, our rainy day fund balance to $2.34 billion in 2025, that this will help to us as it relates to our concerns about revenue. Also, we see other things like an increase in general funds for state service providers of $92 million. All of this type of revenue increase is going to impact us as a state and help us to move forward in our efforts to make sure, as our governor's mantra always is, that we leave no one behind. And we're talking about reducing these structural deficits.
Yeah, so, I mean, that sounds great that the rainy day fund will be, you know, bolstered by some of these reallocations. Certainly the state you know, should be responsible in keeping a good rainy day fund for the real rainy days like the pandemic. We've seen like that tough times do creep up on us and sometimes catch us by total surprise, for sure. But getting more specific here, right, like so in terms of taxes, and I think last legislative session, the House certainly passed a package of tax bills that could help raise revenue without, you know, taxing too much on working class people. I don't know every single thing that the House passed. You might be more familiar with it. But it seemed like the Senate was a challenge there. Now, you know, there's always been, you know, some proposals, you know, to make sure that those who have more can pay more of their fair share to contribute to the economy while making sure that, you know, regular people are not being overburdened in the state. Things such as like the millionaire's tax, combined reporting, right, which makes sure that businesses that are doing business in Maryland but also operate in other states, you know, pay their actual Maryland taxes the way they're supposed to. So are you hearing anything on any particular tax proposals that could be coming out, or is that still being kept pretty quiet as far as what the legislature may do?
I can't specifically speak to, you're talking about anything outside of our FY25 budget?
Yeah, so like I know in this next legislative session, you know, taxes will probably be something that gets discussed, revenue will be discussed, but it's been pretty quiet on the front as far as what Democrats, especially Democrats in the Senate, right, will be willing to do to help solve some of the fiscal challenges that Maryland has. So, you know, there's always one side of the budget, which is expenditures, and it sounds like Governor Moore, of course, is reallocating funds in some areas, reducing funds in other areas as well. But, you know, overall, it seems like the budget problems are being driven by, you know, revenues coming in lower than expected. And so are there any plans that you've heard about to increase revenues through taxes on the wealthy, anything like that, that we can expect to hear in the upcoming legislative session?
Well, certainly I believe that there is a sincere desire and effort to look at closing corporate loopholes and taxing the wealthiest in our state. I can't speak specifically, Larry, to what some of the conversation is, particularly in those areas. I apologize, I really can't give you any more detailed information. What I can really focus on is how we've looked at our ways right now, the sources of revenue that we can increase to make sure that our commitments are made to our Maryland families, you know, those commitments that we talk about through things like the Blueprint for Maryland's Future, talking about how we've increased monies and revenue to support like transportation system and things like that. That's where we have to begin right now. That's where we are right now. I honestly, and if I'm hearing you correctly, can't speak to what is the buzz, if you will, for next session. Does that make sense?
Yeah, understood. So I am eager to see where it's going to come out of the House again this year. Again, the House having been a little bit more progressive than, you know, what took place in the Senate, or I think things just really got reduced to just a number of fee increases, which now you might have seen the news. Governor Hogan was railing against those things. And I know there's been nerves in the past amongst Democrats about, you know, being seen as the tax and spend party, and Hogan is making, you know, he's wasting no time making sure that folks know about these fees that have been increased, right, a number of various fees. But yeah, let's switch gears again. So beyond child care and Medicaid, what other areas do you think need increased attention or funding in the future budget cycles to better serve Marylanders?
So one of my big, and so just to be clear with everyone in our audience, I serve on the Health and Government Operations Committee. And so you'll hear me focus a lot on issues that relate specifically to healthcare. One of my biggest things is our increased need for additional mental health services. I am happy that we have seen we've seen mental health being addressed more than it has ever been before. And that's a good thing. I think that's also an area that we have to be more strategic, more adamant about seeing increased funding. I actually put in some legislation that didn't go through this last session, and I'm hoping to bring back during this upcoming session that speaks specifically to making sure that we can address the mental health needs of our children and our youth and be able to do that without doing it in a stigmatizing way. In other words, without giving them a diagnosis before we even really know what's going on and how we can address those concerns. Needless to say, we always want to look at how we can enhance funding, pump funding for public safety and making sure that we meet the needs of victims of crimes in our state. We are seeing new funding increases to address gun violence prevention and intervention programs. I'd like to see those expanded even more so that our Department of Juvenile Services has the resources that they need to assure that instead of locking our young people up, that we have services available for them so that we look at the context of their situations and circumstances and that we're being able to address those needs prior to having to lock children up and put them away. Those are just some of my specific and personal interests as it relates to some of the things that we can do to increase. Healthcare, again, is another one. I passed legislation during this past session to do an outreach as it relates to prostate, lung, and breast cancer. We have to look at how our health is impacted in the state of Maryland. We have to look at how our heart health is impacted here in the state of Maryland. And so I'd like to see more legislation that looks at ways that we can cover services, healthcare services for people whose lives could literally be saved by a simple test that lets them know something that they're at high risk for that they may be asymptomatic from.
Yeah. Absolutely. I hear it all the time, a lot of horror stories of, you know, times where diseases were caught far too late, you know, and, you know, if folks would have had more preventative health care, they would have been able to catch those things, you know. So many people have lost their lives as a result of that. I want to remind listeners also that you can call in at 202-588-0893. So I think you may have covered this, but I did want to get to the Medicaid expansions in the budget. So what are the things, you know, people can expect from, you know, the expansions in terms of Medicaid funding?
Okay. And so it's important to know that we had a very higher than anticipated Medicaid enrollment, which needless to say led to higher than expected Medicaid costs. And over $200 million from our rainy day fund was allocated for fiscal year 2040 and 25. This is key to driving our economic growth, and we want to make sure that it's continued to be funded in such a way that it meets the needs of all of our residents. This includes, Larry, for many long-term service supports, a financial increase of 3%. And so we see a lot of our services receive an increase in Medicaid funding, Medicaid reimbursement, so that we can make sure that the needs of our constituents are being met.
Great. Yeah, fantastic. You know, kind of, you mentioned your advocacy and around healthcare, and of course, we worked very closely with you on your legislation to hold healthcare insurance companies accountable for being more transparent around what's going on with claim denials. Mm-hmm. And I'm really curious, like, you know, like what's the latest on that since the legislative session? I believe some type of task force or commission, I forget the technical term, was going to be set up. Do you have any updates on that particularly?
So sponsored and at your recommendation, at the recommendation of Progressive Maryland, a bill, HB 1337, which the Health Insurance Appeals and Grievance Process, talking about reporting requirements. And this actually requires insurance carriers to report additional data on the number of members entitled to healthcare benefits under a policy plan or certificate, and the number of clean claims for reimbursement processed by a carrier to the Maryland Health Commission. And when we talk about this, what we're talking about specifically is when someone's doctor, for example, recommends that his client has his patient receives certain testing, and it goes to the insurance company, and the insurance company denies it. And we say, why are you denying it? And you know, you put it back over and over and over again. And what we call that is a clean claim. In other words, what was submitted to the insurance company does not need to be changed. It wasn't that they didn't get the information that they needed. It wasn't that everything was not complete or there were questions about the claim itself. That makes it a clean claim. How is it that we can submit this claim, it's denied over and over and over again, say four, five, sometimes six times, Larry, and then it's all of a sudden approved? You know what that does? That decreases a person's opportunity to get the best healthcare. Because while you're denying this claim, a lot of times people who are dealing with medical challenges are declining, right? So this bill calls for us to get together as a group to talk about what is going on, how do we get the information, why are you in fact denying a claim that you come back later and approve? And so we actually are in the process, even as we speak. We've just started meeting. I think we just had our third or fourth scheduled meeting. I apologize. I am a part of that group. And we are addressing these things, and we're looking at, and possibly even future legislation that says, listen, if this is what is going on, there has to be some further accountability. And so in order to do that, we are actually getting together as a group to just look at this with the Maryland Health Commission and to see where the real deficits and challenges are, and to look at strategic ways to address it further.
Great. So it seems like the meetings are moving along. What are you hearing from the industry now that you've gotten this process started? Like, are they justifying some of this behavior in any way that makes any sense? Because I remember attending some of these hearings, and it was just horrible, some of their talking points. I'm just wondering, what are they saying now?
So to be very honest with you, we have not gotten a lot of impact from the industries at this point, because we're still looking at the data and the information ourselves so that we can present a legitimate concern and present something that they can actually, you know, that we can say, hold you accountable to. Does that make sense?
Great. Yeah. So have they engaged at all to, you know, provide the information that you need? They've been pretty cooperative.
As far as I'm aware, yes, they've been pretty cooperative in in providing the information that's been requested.
Okay, got it. Okay, so now in terms of getting back to the budget as well, so like, what do you feel like some of the other cuts that are in the governor's budget? I've seen, you know, cuts, of course, to the university system, Maryland, Department of Juvenile Services, Office of Crime Prevention, the Governor's Office of Crime Prevention and Policy, some of those cuts as well. Like, what are some of the impacts there from these cuts in the budget in areas where things were not reallocated that you can expect people to begin seeing?
So let me speak to the whole Department of Juvenile Services, because I have a real heart for wanting to assure that our Department of Juvenile Services needs are being met. So I think it's very unfortunate that we have to cut services, But at the same time, Larry, I believe that the focus on making sure that the needs of families are being met, the focus on assuring that we can put money into child care services, child poverty, the economy, supporting economic mobility, these things should be able to help to assure that our children are getting the intervention and the services that they need that prevent them from even making their way into the Department of Juvenile Services. That is what my goal, that is what my prayer is, that when we increase those supports to see that the needs of our children are being met, right? To see that families have access to healthcare, to preventative care, to child care. You understand what I'm saying? That families are meeting their economic resources, that this will somehow help to prevent those challenges that cause us to see an increase of our youth in the Department of Juvenile Services.
Yeah, got it.
It's got to balance itself out, Larry. It has to balance itself out. You know, needless to say, we don't want to see any of these budget cuts, but I believe that the function, that the strategy of the budget cuts has been to help balance out those things. And I believe that particularly as it relates to the public defender's office and juvenile services, and I should have specifically said the public defender's office, that when we see services on one end, they will help to prevent, you know, the way that we address punitive services on another end.
Yeah, so yeah, I know that like investments in things like child care and some of the things that Medicaid can offer can be very preventative for families and not having young people have to even engage with the Department of Corrections or juvenile services.
Exactly. Right.
So, of course, the legislative session is coming up in January. The budget is going to be a hot topic, both the revenue side and the expense side and everything of that nature. And, you know, what we're talking about now is, of course, I believe some of the changes that the governor has the power through the Board of Public Works and through, like, some of his executive authority to reallocate funding, choose not to spend certain funding, et cetera. But next year in January is going to be the big show in Annapolis, right? And how can people like be engaged in that process if they want to see something different with regards to our budget or more revenue added to the budget? Tell me a little bit about that project for our listeners.
Thank you, Larry. And I'm really glad you asked that question because the reality is this. We as elected officials are here to serve the constituents of the state of Maryland. And so it is extremely important that we hear from our constituents regarding their specific concerns about anything, body, mind, spirit, that impacts us as a people. It's important that people take time to watch some of these public broadcasts of things that are taking place in Annapolis, at the same time to come to Annapolis to advocate for issues that are important to them, that meet our self-interest as individuals and our self-interest as a people, that help to see how we can grow and be more sustained in our economic, in our cultural, and all of the things that make us a thriving people and a thriving community. And so I think it's really, really important for people to use their voices. You know, just as important as you know and I know as it is for people to use their voices to vote, right? It's important for people to come and to talk about the situations and the circumstances that are impacting them, and also to get as much education. Because a lot of times, Larry, some of the questions that we get and some of the directives that we receive are simply based out of a lack of knowledge. And so what we don't know sometimes as a people we make up, we're all guilty of that. And so it's really important if we want to see major changes in our community, that we make sure that we have a voice, that we ask the questions, that we get the clarity, that we get accountability.
Yep. Well, that sounds good. You know, you'll see our folks down there, and I hope many WPFW listeners will be paying close attention if you live in Maryland to what's happening in Annapolis. And once again, this is Community Watch and Comment here with Larry Stafford on 89.3. And we have Delegate Jamila Woods. So I want to thank you so much, Delegate. And is there anything else that you would want to share with our listeners before you go?
Yes, absolutely. As we all know, this is a critical time for us, not just in the state of Maryland, but in this country. I want to please, please, please make it clear that we have to get people out to the polls in November, that we have until October the 15th to assure that people are registered to vote. I'm telling people, please. I was out at an event this past weekend with the South County Economic Justice Commission doing voter registration. Please, we need to get to our parks, to our playgrounds, to our churches, to places where people converge to assure that we are registered to vote. We need to make sure that we are vetting our candidates. We need to make sure that we are not putting people in the White House whose objectives are selfish and self-centered. This is not a time for us to be speaking language of hatred and just doing and saying things that further divide us as a people. We need to be very careful. I just want to encourage all of the listeners out there, please do whatever you can. I plan on going with a group to Pennsylvania to do some campaigning. Listen, this is the time that we need to get out and be very adamant. We need to talk to our young people. We need to talk to our seniors. We need to hear what they have to say and then encourage them to make our voices matter. As you know, Larry, as an organizer, you know, I started out understanding that power is organized people and organized money. And so it is important that we invest in these candidates who we need to see rise in the state of Maryland. We need to invest in these candidates who we need to see rise to the president of the United States of America. And we need to be very clear to not allow people to make us feel that we are not qualified, that we've not done our part. We need to do our homework and find out where the real fake news is coming from. That's my, I can't say it enough, Larry. We have got to get our people to the polls and out to vote. This country can go down the drain, literally, if we're not careful and if we don't take the opportunity to make our vote count. And needless to say, I'm 150% in support of Kamala Harris and Tim Walz for president and vice president of the United States. And here in the state of Maryland, it is extremely important that we assure that we see people like Angela Alsobrooks, Sarah Elfrid, and some of these others who are running to assure that we maintain seats in our federal government that will help us to move forward as a state and as a country.
Great. Well, fantastic talking to you today. And thank you so much for joining us once again. You are listening to Community Watch and Comment with Larry Stafford this time. And we appreciate all our listeners on WPFW.
Thanks so much, Larry.
All right. Take care.
Watch out, some guys are only about
looking for your friend, the one you let hit it and never called you again. Remember when he told you he was about to Benjamins? Yeah. You act like you and him, they give him a little trim to begin. Now you think you really gonna pretend like you wasn't down and you called him again. Plus when you give it up so easy, you ain't even fooling him. If you did it then you probably can. Talking out your neck saying you're a Christian, a Muslim, sleeping with the gin. Now that was the sin that did Jezebel in. Who you gonna tell when the repercussions spin? Showing off your ass cause you thinking it's a trend, girlfriend. Let me break it down for you again. You know I only say it cause I'm truly genuine. Don't be a hard rock when you really are a gin, baby girl. Respect is just the minimum. Nigga, but you still defending them now. Lauren is only human. Don't think I haven't been through the same predicament. Let it sit inside your head.
million women in Philly pen. It's silly when girls sell their souls because it's sin. Look at where you be in. Hair weaves like Europeans. Fake nails done by Koreans. Come again. Yeah. A win-win. Come again. To the man, more concerned with his rims and his Timbs and his women, him and his men. Come in the club like hooligans, don't care who they offend, popping yang.
Like you got yang.
Let's not pretend. The one that pack pissed out by the waist, man. Crissed out by the casement. Still the name of this basement. The pretty face man, claiming that they did a bid, man. Need to take care of their 3 and 4 kids. Been the face in court case when the child support late. Money taking, heartbreaking. Now you wonder why women hate me. And the sneaky silent man, the punk domestic violence man, the quick to shoot the semen. Stop acting like boys and be men. How you gon' win when you ain't right within? How you gon' win when you ain't right within? How you gon' win when you ain't right within? Come again.
Thank you, everybody, for listening today. That's it for today's Community Watch and Comment. Thank you once again for tuning in. And another big thank you to Delegate Jamila Woods for joining us. I'm Larry Stafford Jr., co-hosting now with Dave Rabin. You can listen live on your radio or stream this at WPFW.org or listen anytime after the show, wherever you get your podcasts, whether it be iTunes, Google Play, wherever you listen to podcasts, but definitely on the WPFW.org website. Let's get some traffic going to that website. And there's also great news and community events that you can find on WPFWFM.org. You can click on all shows, find out what other shows are happening. And thank you so much for listening again. And now we're going to go into the news next. And we'll see you again soon with Community Watch and Comment. I think Dave Rabin will be back next week. All right. Y'all have a great day.
United Black Community presents the 20th annual A Love Supreme, a musical poetic birthday tribute to another John Coltrane. Featuring the Nassau Holiday Quartet, Cindy Brown, and Kiki Taiko, Nana Lele, and the Malcolm X Drummers and Dancers. Friday, September 20th, 2024, at E-Life Restaurant, 9033 Central Avenue in Capitol Heights, Maryland. There will also be a special tribute to our esteemed ancestors in Black culture, politics, and music. More information can be found at Blue Nile, Sankofa Books, Sinbeb Cafe, or Everlasting Life. And at 240-832-7203 or ubcindc@yahoo.com. That's ubcindc@yahoo.com. It's the 20th annual A Love Supreme, a musical poetic birthday tribute to Annetta Ruth, John Coltrane. This Friday, September 20th at E-Life Restaurant, presented by United Black Community.
The talk show Africa Now airs Wednesdays at 1 p.m. It's a modern view on historical issues concerning the entire African world, addressing how African people are participating in globalization, ways in which the rest of the world continues to exploit African resources, uncovering labor violations by corrupt politicians and Western government powers. Learn what's happening now in interviews with artists, activists, scholars, and a host of other experts each episode. Listen Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Africa Now is also available from iTunes Podcast, Google Play Music, as well as SoundCloud on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
For
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onnested. The man suspected of an attempted assassination against Donald Trump was charged with federal firearm crimes Monday. Here's U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Florida, Markenzie LaPointe.
Roth was charged federally with possession of a firearm by a convicted felon and possession and receipt of a firearm with an obliterated serial number. According to the complaint, Roth was convicted of felonies in North Carolina in December 2002 and March 2010, and therefore was prohibited from possessing a firearm.
Ryan Wesley Routh allegedly camped outside a Florida golf course with food and a rifle for nearly 12 hours before a Secret Service agent thwarted the potential attack and opened fire, according to court documents filed Monday. Officials say Routh did not fire any shots, never had Trump in his line of sight, and sped away after being shot at by an agent who spotted him. He was arrested in a neighboring county. Routh, a one-time Trump supporter, self-published a book last year urging Iran to kill the former president. In his book, Ukraine's Unwinnable War, Routh describes Trump as a buffoon for both a deadly 2021 Capitol attack and backing out of the Iran nuclear deal. Trump and his running mate are blaming Democrats for the assassination attempt. Here's Trump's pick for Vice President, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance.
But you know, the big difference between conservatives and liberals is that no one has tried to kill Kamala Harris in the last couple of months, and two people now have tried to kill Donald Trump in the last couple of months. I'd say that's pretty strong evidence that the left needs to tone down the rhetoric and needs to cut this crap out. Somebody's going to get hurt by it.
Vance said Democrats cannot call Trump a threat to democracy and a fascist and expect violence would not follow. He also said he would do his part to tone down rhetoric. Trump has in recent weeks regularly called Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris a communist and a fascist. He's also said Harris and Democrats are threats to democracy. Trump and Vance's xenophobic anti-immigrant rhetoric about Haitian immigrants eating people's pets in Springfield, Ohio, has led to dozens of violent threats, including bomb threats against government buildings and schools. Here's Ohio Republican Governor Mike DeWine, who spoke Monday.
We have received at least 33 separate bomb threats, each one of which has been responded to, and each one of whom has been found as a hoax.
Springfield City Hall, several schools, and state motor vehicle offices were forced to evacuate last week after receiving bomb threats. Israel says halting Hezbollah's attacks in the country's north to allow its residents to return to their homes is now an official war goal as it considers a wider military operation in Lebanon, raising concerns of a wider regional war in the Middle East. Israel has regularly launched airstrikes in response to attacks from Hezbollah in Lebanon since Hamas's October 7th attack in Israel and the ensuing war in Gaza. The fighting has displaced tens of thousands on both sides of the border. Hezbollah has said it would halt the attacks if there's a ceasefire in Gaza. The U.S. has pressed for restraint. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is heading to Egypt this week on his 10th trip to the Middle East since the war in Gaza began nearly 1 year ago. The trip is partly aimed at refining a proposal to present to Israel and Hamas for a ceasefire deal and release of hostages. He has no public plans to meet with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Monday, he met with Israeli opposition leader Yair Lapid in Washington, who called for a hostage deal to be realized.
Israel needs the hostage deal and the end of the war, and no political process or political turbulence should affect the hostage deal. We have to bring them back home.
The United Nations Security Council